It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here on our new day, our new time, Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC, to talk about the latest from Windows, the latest CEO speculation, new PCs at CES, and a whole lot more. You stay tuned. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 344, recorded January 8th, 2014. Is there any corn? Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging, informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For 50% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW50. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers the latest news from Microsoft. Big Green, as they're known colloquially by no one. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We were talking before the show. Who has the Ford is the blue oval, you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in fact, that's Scott Monty, who's their social media guy, says that internally sometimes they talk about polishing the blue oval.
Yeah. They hawked the blue oval. That was one of Alan Mulally's first moves, remember?
Hawking the blue oval?
Yeah, they put it up against, they put it up for credit so that they could avoid federal receivership.
Smart move. Didn't have to take TARP funds or whatever it is the auto industry got. That's Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. And we are here on our new time. If you're watching, then I guess you figured it out. If you're watching after the fact, bereft because nobody showed up Thursday, we've moved to Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC, so that Leo, whoever that is, some guy named Leo, gets 2 days off a week. Steve Gibson said, what are you going to do with 2 days off a week? I said, it's called a weekend, Steve. Maybe you've heard of it.
It's called normal.
Self-employed people don't understand the concept of time off. Because you're always working, right? Yes. And in fact, Lisa's immediately said, great, we'll have more of you on Thursday and Friday for doing stuff. We can do meetings. No, I'm going home. Wow. I'm going to sit in my boxer shorts and play
there's
Xbox.
Stuff around the house that needs to be done, Leo.
There always is. So hello, everybody. Did you have a nice New Year? Thank you for being here New Year's Day. That was so much fun. Mm-hmm. Very grateful. I guess we saw you the next day.
Yep, you did. You got to see us right after.
Such a blur.
It is a blur.
Yeah. But I'll repeat it for those who didn't. Paul and Mary Jo were great. Mary Jo did later on a beer tasting, which we're now getting those up, by the way. We're doing a couple of things we're doing. On our Inside Twit YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTwit, we're putting each hour up by itself. We realize you can't put a 24-hour video up.
Right.
So
right.
Each hour by itself. But then we're going to, in our Twit specials feed, do things like Mary Jo Foley drinking beer.
nice.
Yeah, so that'd be fun. Paul Thurrott killing me in combat. Things like that. Our top story, of course, this is CES week. It'd be crazy not to talk about CES. Everybody else seems to be. Is there a Windows angle, though?
Surprisingly, yes.
Yeah, sure.
Intel's there. Intel always shows concept stuff, right? In fact, I like
Microsoft
that.
Microsoft has a big online presence about CES.
Wait a minute. Yeah. They're not there.
I know, but if you just follow them online, like I've been doing, it seems like they're there.
Isn't that interesting that they didn't want to be there? They gave up their booth. They used to have, for years, they had the booth across the aisle from Intel.
They had that first booth that you walked in that, what was it, the... Mm-hmm.
The South
North Hall or the North, South Hall?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Whatever the initial hall, the big hall, the main hall.
Yeah.
Right there, Microsoft.
That was them. Yep. And now it's Hisense, the big Chinese TV company. By the way, we're doing a deal with Hisense.
Really?
I'm very proud to say. I think they announced that they're going to have a Roku TV, you know, with built-in Roku. And I think there, Twit will be one of the channels. We're on Roku already, but I think on the new Hisense.
They're like the KTEL of China.
Well, you know what it is? I think everybody looks at Samsung and LG, which used to be Lucky Gold LG? Star. LG.
LG?
LG. They LG. Look at these Korean companies, which were really the back of the supermarket TV sets.
Yeah.
And at one point, they just said, no, we don't want to be that. We want to be Sony. And they killed Sony. And I think the Chinese companies, Hisense and TLC, or TCL rather, are looking at Samsung and LG saying, we can do that. Mm-hmm. We make the dang things anyway. So
that's what Asus did in the PC market.
Did know. They?
Yeah.
Because they, yeah, were a motherboard pretty, manufacturer for a long time, right?
Yeah. Well, they used to come up with the designs. I mean, I all the early Dell laptops were all actually
oh, that's
Asus
interesting.
And other ODMs. You know, yeah.
Yeah. It's like I think a lot of people didn't know that the early Apple laptops were all Sony.
Yeah.
Sony designed. Right. It's not unusual. So what does Microsoft say about CES?
Well, they've been blogging a lot about it on the Windows blog. They've been talking about all the new hardware that's coming out. Finally, the Windows 8 hardware.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a couple years later than yeah, really. A lot of us thought it would.
Windows devices announced at CES.
There's Let's lots see. Of them.
There's lots of them. Wow, you're right. They're really acting as if they're like...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This is I mean, like, a lot of them are very odd, but there's some
Well, look
really
at this one. What is this giant thing the guy's holding here? Let's check.
Oh. I believe that's one of those 22-inch or 22-inch like...
It's a Panasonic tough pad.
Yeah.
Yeah, better be tough, because if you're walking around, yep. people are going to beat you up.
Hey, throw me that PC for a second, would you?
But it is 4K. I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. There's another 4K one. Toshiba announced a 4K laptop.
Yep. That might be it right there.
No, this is the Toshiba Tekra W50, a powerhouse. There's a satellite. Here's a Vio Fit. We're looking at the Microsoft Flickr stream, which cracks me up.
There's that tough, ruggedized Panasonic.
How much do you think
one?
Microsoft spent going to CES every year?
Well, I know the booth alone has got to be more than $1 million, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody was probably doing the math and said, you know, we could blog about this like we're there. And
same benefit.
As far as people who visit us on the web go, it's the same thing.
No,
but
I
they are there too. We shouldn't say they're not
yeah,
there.
They're there in suites, in booths. Where are they?
Yeah, Julie Larson Green's there and Panos Panay, who had Surface, is there. So they're there, and they're meeting with people privately. And like private backroom.
Yeah, that's how companies do it nowadays.
Yeah.
And we stopped going to CES for very much the same reason. It didn't cost us $1.5 million for a booth, but it's very expensive to have a presence at CES. So we just send reporters down. It's very similar coverage. Yeah. We're just not sitting there, you know. This is cool. This is the Origin PC Genesis and Millennium. It's kind of got a neat, well, it's a case. Actually, you know, see, I get suckered. I shouldn't get suckered. Because inside, it's the same as anything else, right?
Every PC gaming case from the past 30 years has been designed like the alien from Aliens.
Right.
You know, it's
okay,
got
we have to talk about that one. The one that's on the screen right now.
This is not new. The ThinkPad X1.
Oh, it is new, though.
There is a new one. And finally, a real laptop. Yes.
What do you mean by real? This is the Lenovo laptop. ThinkPad X1 Carbon.
Right. It's not one of these weird hybrid, rip the screen off, rip the keyboard off. It's actually a clamshell.
Wait a minute. There's no Android? What good is that?
I know exactly.
No Android.
Wait, this isn't a Chromebook? Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly.
So this looks like it's 16.9. It's hard to tell from the picture.
Paul knows a lot about this one.
I think this is
it's
the...
It's super high res.
Okay.
You know, I want to say it's 2560 by, I don't remember the other one, 1400, something like that.
See, that's one thing that early Windows 8 cheapos were 1360 by 768 or whatever. That was terrible.
Or the 8-inchers, which are 1280 by 800, which is even worse.
Yeah.
Not to get off track here, but they also have a ThinkPad mini tablet, which looks just like their, well, it looks a lot like their Lenovo Mix 2, I think it's called, the 8-inch version. And so, you know, their ThinkPad version of that has a 1920 by 1200 screen. So that's kind of interesting. But anyway, but back to the X1. So the X1 Carbon, though, so it's Windows 8.1, obviously. 14-inch Ultrabook, latest version of the Intel processor and chipset. 9 hours of battery life. It has kind of a unique single plug kind of thing. This is the type of thing Apple usually does. You know, like over the years, I always kind of wondered why they never came up with a docking solution for their portable computers. But what they've done is they've taken the power plug and they're using that as expansion as well. And so you can have it as both a dock and a power port. So you just have the one thing plugged into the computer, you know, and expand it off on the dock. So that's kind of a cool thing. And they don't really, you can almost tell from this shot, but that screen actually goes parallel to the body. You can make it so that it's perfect straight.
Yeah. Flat, you mean?
Flat. Thank you.
So it's
Has that little ThinkPad red thing, whatever you call it.
Yeah, the nubbin,
that
which I love personally.
I love that too.
Yeah, I would turn off the trackpad personally, but that's my thing.
Well, that's their claim to fame. I know nobody else does that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the keyboard layout?
I guess there's kind of a non-standard layout going on. There's no
catalog. Yeah. Dr. Pizza had a complete meltdown about this keyboard.
I looked at it and I thought, you know what?
Peter's kind of known.
I'm okay with all this stuff.
They took away the caps lock. Okay, so for
well, I disable caps lock on every computer. I only use it
by mistake ever.
Yep. Yep.
Right,
yep.
But for developers, that can be a problem because a lot of them need the caps lock. Or
the way they do it is there's a shift key that you can hold down and the light comes
that's
on.
Fine.
It's in the caps lock. Yeah. So where the caps lock key was, there's a home and probably an end button in that space.
Yeah.
The other weird bit is there's a kind of a touch sensitive strip where the function keys usually are, and it's application specific. And there's several hundred applications it knows about, and I guess you can program others, but it will change its functions based on that if that's what you want it to do, or you can switch it into just a normal function key mode as well.
Isn't the delete or the back button in a weird place too?
Let me see if I can see it.
Delete and backspace are up in the corner together. So look right there. Those top two keys on the right are backspace and delete.
Oh, that's very strange.
It's pretty
well,
odd.
Except for one thing. When I look at the keyboard I'm using now, backspace and delete are in those basic positions.
I don't even have a backspace. I have a delete, nothing. So, I see. There's delete right and delete left. Yeah, you're right. You know what? That's not so weird.
I think the weirdest, there are two weirdisms. So the escape button is next to the one where it's usually above that, up by the
right
function.
It's not on that row. It would be
what's usually in that space is kind of like the tilde.
Yeah.
And look where that is now. It's to the right of the space bar.
See, programmers aren't going to like that because they do use tilde and backtick a lot. And now it's down here.
Yeah, down there. And what's usually there on a Windows keyboard is this key that no one ever uses, which is a Windows right click kind of key.
Right.
Context menu key.
They also have replaced the control lock with a home end key. So home end is no longer down over by page up, page down.
Yep.
I guess, you know, you'd get used to it, but it is for sure non-standard.
Yeah, it's a little different, but none of these things are an issue for me. I like that there's no function key. Right, because one of the problems with keyboards is that when there is an FN key down there, it's sometimes it's to the left of control, sometimes it's to the right of control,
right.
And you know, figuring that out is always a mess. So that's not there mucking things up.
But they do they now have a strip at the top,
yeah,
that is kind of a function ribbon, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting
because
I'm on the Lenovo site here, and they have a lot of close-ups of the keyboard. I think they understand that this is a potential problem, and so they want to really give you a chance at least to look at
it. Well, as far as developers go, though, I as a relatively small market, I mean, Lenovo's not targeting developers, right?
No. This is a business laptop. Although developers love Lenovo, so.
I know. Yeah. I think a lot of developers would like just a regular laptop like this, and I think it is a fairly small cross-section of people, but why did they change it?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they wanted to do something dynamic with that function key row. Yeah. And what that screwed up were a couple of keys, like the escape key and the home and end keys probably would have been part of that. And I think in thinking about that, they were like, you know, we've been talking about this caps lock thing for a long time. And I think they actually solved that with the shift that can lock. And I don't think that's too difficult for people. So if you really do need caps lock for some reason, it's right there.
Now, I got to point out, they're selling two versions, one with Windows 7.
Oh, they really?
Prominently displayed right next to the one with Windows 8.
I think that's good because, you know, if this is a business laptop, a lot of businesses are standardized on Windows 7.
Yeah.
Good to have the choice.
Yeah.
It's expensive, though.
$2,099 for
an
i7.
That's MacBook Pro territory.
Yeah, more than much more than MacBook Pro.
Well, it's a 14-inch, so I mean, it's sort of between the 13 and the 15 MacBook Pro.
Yeah, but $2,100.
That's big bucks.
Is more than a 15-inch MacBook.
So I think when you can configure it yourself, which is coming soon, Mary Jo would probably be able to.
That starts at $1,299.
Yeah, you can get rid of the multi-touch if you want to do that. You can pick and choose what you've got going on.
You know, I we're spending a lot of time on this, but this is actually, to me, this is one of the best Windows laptops out there, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
There's a reason to do that. Actually, it is MacBook Pro territory. You're right. The 15-inch i7 MacBook Pro is $2,600.
Yeah. It's big bucks. I mean,
so we're you're right.
There's no way around it. This is expensive.
Yeah, that's the top of the line Retina.
You okay, Mary Jo?
What's
I have been very sick this week. So
join the club, God! I thought
you had allergies.
Just now getting better. We've just been staying up all day on New Year's didn't help either.
And then the cold weather here is just like
cold. As they say on the television, it's cold and flu season.
Well, I get like a cold in early December, and then I cough for the rest of the week.
Yeah, exactly.
Like never goes away. It modulates. It's like worse, and then it seems like it's getting better, and it gets worse. You
know? Yeah. So back to the Microsoft CES 2014 page, which looks kind of like The Verge or, you know, Yahoo Tech. It's
very Metro style.
Oh, very Metro. New Windows devices.
I think it's mostly about the devices.
We're at CES this week. Check out our full coverage right here.
Yep.
On their Twitter feed? Well, that's long form.
they have their communications people are there, the ones who are blogging, so they are
that's
there.
Really as a news organization.
Right, as a news organization, yeah.
Whoa. Yep. Boy, competition coming left and right for the old twit.
Right. You know the other machine that got announced there that I thought was pretty interesting was the Samsung EtiveBook 9, the new one. They announced a 15-inch one that has 14 hours of battery, but worse resolution.
Oh.
So that's the update to the machine I'm currently using.
You're using
I have a 15-inch, the previous gen, which is not called Ative whatever 9. I'm not even sure what it's called. So I think they just called it Series 9 before or something like that.
Yeah. It's Ative, like a leave.
Ative, right. That's right.
I have no respect for Samsung's brands, Leo. I'm not going to.
Neither does Michael Bay, so you're in good company.
Oh, that was absolutely unbelievable.
That will live in memory as perhaps the worst keynote, ever.
And you I felt so bad for the guy.
Oh yeah, of course. Mean, that's why it's painful. It's not comfortable, right? So nobody wants to be.
No, anyone who has stood up in front of other people and had to do anything understands the pain.
Yeah.
Of that, and
I felt for him, but you know, in hindsight,
so many people
couldn't have been better publicity for Samsung.
I know it's true, but man, and so many people I saw saying, why couldn't he have ad-libbed? They were asking him questions about himself and his work,
not an actor,
exactly. And he knew, like he was supposed to make certain remarks, right? So he's probably like in his head going, like, oh, what am I going to say? You know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for him. He did what a lot of people do when they're faced with a teleprompter. No one should ever read it. Teleprompters should. Right. I wish they would be banned from the universe.
That's actually what happened to me in New Zealand a year and a half ago. I went down there and we were doing our pre-show stuff, and I usually I just go and talk, and that's how I do things. And they had all this teleprompter action going. Yeah. I've never done a teleprompter before, so we did a couple walkthroughs, and I had a little meltdown, and I was like, I'm not reading this.
No.
This is not how I do things. And it went fine. You know, after that, it was fine.
People watch television and they see prompters and they think that that's what you do. And the people who do it well make it look so easy that you don't realize it's not at all easy.
No.
And
it's not natural if that's not the way you do things. I mean, it's just not.
So what Bay did is he skipped a chunk of the script. He was nervous, so he skipped a chunk of the script.
It wasn't actually off. He seemed to be indicating that it wasn't working.
What he said in his blog post was, it's my fault. I skipped the intro. I skipped ahead. Now, what happens is the guy who's doing the prompter goes, what the hell? And starts, and then, but see, it was a bad prompt interpreter because then he starts turning the knob, looking for where they are. So what you do if you're a, for anybody ever wants to run a prompter, let me tell you, you jump to something they haven't said, the next thing they haven't said, and you sit there until they read that.
Until they edit.
Yeah.
What you don't do is try to figure out where they are now and get there, because all that does is make them go crazy. And you could see them trying to, and then, bae, I don't blame them. I would have walked off. Hey, the rumor was he was paid $1.5 million.
Oh, wow. Really?
Well, he's doing more than that, right? He's going to be traveling around with the Samsung 105-inch 4K display, showing clips from Transformers in cities at a city near you. So, obviously, it's a big, you know, deal. Mm-hmm. I speculated. I thought maybe he just got paid by one of those TVs. I'd have done that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Give me a 105-inch TV.
I would have walked off the stage with it. You know, just to make sure I had
under my arm. Yeah. Anyway, nothing more to see here, except that Samsung got more publicity than they could have ever dreamed.
That's true.
Worth every
back
penny.
To the ATIV or whatever it's called.
Yeah. I'm looking to find
I don't know it. If you would ever consider using a machine that with that large, but the one I have, I like it a lot. I would.
It's 15 inches. I would consider. I'm looking at the specs, right?
What do you mean large? Inches. Is it that large?
It's a 15-inch screen.
Yeah, 15-inch screen.
That's what I use.
1920
by... Yeah, no, I do
by...
too. I do too.
No, not 1920.
And honestly, for the size, it's not that heavy.
Is it the ATIV Book 9 Plus?
Yeah, it's the same body of the machine that I have now. My machine was a Windows 7 machine, so it doesn't come with touch. And this one has some crazy high resolution, I think. Or maybe that's the 13-inch. Actually, the 15-inch might not have a crazy high resolution.
No, the new one, the 14-hour battery is lower resolution, but the trade-off is you get way more battery life, 14
battery,
hours.
Right. So the 13-inch version you can get with some, you know, 3280 by whatever or some crazy resolution like that, I think.
Yeah, well, and as usual, Samsung is putting some sort of weird Samsung junkola on there. Yeah. It's a convergence solution with Samsung Side Sync and Home Sync Lite.
I just want a laptop, guys.
You know? How do they do that?
Just want to type.
Yes, but does the camera have a golf mode? Because I'd like to bring my laptop onto the links.
What those people exist, Leo.
Oh, apparently they all work at Samsung.
I do have a certain antagonism toward Samsung as well, I guess.
I don't feel like they're bad people. Just misguided.
I'm not saying they're all going to hell. I'm just saying, you know, the leaders of the company, certainly.
Is doing the Franken machine. This is not the first time. I mean, I think they've done Transformers and so forth before, but haven't they? It seems like everything that's new was old. Because I seem to remember, unless I'm completely mistaken, 2 years ago, Windows plus Android in one device. But now they're doing it again. The Transformer Book Duet.
We agree that this is a machine without a purpose, though. I don't understand.
Who wants this? Yeah. I agree. I don't understand.
I'm very confused who this is for.
This is like a dual boot machine.
It is. Except you can switch back and forth.
They're not really dual booting because they're both available, right?
Right. You can switch back and forth. And then I guess when you're using Android, you get slightly more battery, I think, than if you're using only Windows. I don't know. I just was kind of thinking, who is this for?
I don't know.
And I'm not totally sure. It could be for people who use a lot of Google apps like Gmail, G Drive, maybe.
It just cracks me up. Look, you could take it off the keyboard and now it's Android. Then you put it back and it's Windows.
Like you unplug it and it turns into something different.
Yeah. Oh, so weird. I don't. And I guess it is dual boot because it takes a little while to go from one to the other. I guess if you really want to play your Android, you know, games.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fair to say that the software solutions for doing that in Windows are not seamless and great.
Yeah.
Right. You could do BlueStacks, right?
BlueStacks is very not complete.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's, you know, it works, but, you know.
Yeah.
I just written something about this, but, you know, to me, a ThinkPad X1 Carbon with a you know, a 7-inch Nexus 7 tablet would kind of solve this problem very nicely. Right. Not be very complex.
That's, and it's Windows 8.1. It's not. It's not RT. It's Windows Pro.
I think it is.
Yeah,
I'm not even sure.
I don't know. I guess we're so uninterested that we don't.
I just, yeah, you know, I
it's just so hard to remember. I think it is Windows Intel. Yeah, it's Intel based.
Yeah. And then, which is interesting because I guess Android, does Android run on Intel? I guess it does.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah. Here's the Vivo Tab Note 8, designed for one-handed use. How many times have you said, I like Windows, but I wish I didn't have to use both hands?
It's like Windows in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
So it's yet another mini tablet. I'm not sure there's anything special going on
Atom
here.
Atom processor, other than 2 gigs RAM.
Yeah.
That Lenovo mini tablet looked cool.
I think the Lenovo ThinkPad 8 is more interesting because it's a slightly faster processor. It has a high-res screen, which is a first, right, on the Windows mini tablet. It's 1920 by 1200. You know, it's a ThinkPad. And they do the whole, I haven't seen it yet, but they have a, you know, kind of a travel keyboard solution and all that kind of stuff. You can use it like a real computer. So that could be of interest as well.
You know, I just feel like everybody's throwing stuff against the wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
It's like, let's see, can we find any way to differentiate all these tablets that look exactly the same?
Right. Bill Hicks, the mini tablets are tough because they are almost literally exactly the same. Yeah. They're just so close.
Bill Hicks in our chat room is saying, tech used to solve problems. Now it's like creating, looking for a problem.
Right. It's like tech was like the tool for the job, not the job.
Yeah.
You know,
I've invented this interesting new tool. It's like a hammer, but not. And let's just see if anybody wants it.
What do you use it for? I don't know. Let's see what people use it for.
Well, just throw it up against the wall.
That idea stinks. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's our industry.
I have a three-headed hammer I've invented. And I'm sure somebody's going to want this. You wouldn't see that in any other industry but the tech industry.
It's crazy.
Where they just,
it's like a car company coming up with a three-wheeled car now.
Yeah.
And when asked why, they said, I don't know, let's see how it goes.
We thought the accelerator should be on the left. It just seemed like a better way.
You can save a little bit of money by not having four tires.
There was a car at CES that only has one door.
It was.
when you went through it, you came out on the other side of the car?
We did a report on Father Robert Ballister. I'm trying to remember the brand name of it. It was like... I can't remember the name of it. And
it doesn't sound safe.
It's $8,000. And it was the ELIO. Is that it? Okay.
This isn't one of those like Indian car
things. 84 miles per gallon, three wheels, one door on the left where the driver would be. It's basically a trike.
Yeah.
So it won't be out for a year, but they're showing it at CES this year.
It's like a spaceship from a Star Wars movie.
It's a little odd. But, you know.
Does it run Android?
Yes.
It looks like an Android.
Yes, it does.
Look, it's got little green eyes.
It kind of looks like the Android guy.
Mm-hmm.
That green guy.
It does. 84 miles a gallon. It seems like it should get better than 84 miles a gallon. That doesn't seem like that's good for something. If I'm going to drive that kind of crap around, I should get 150 miles to the gallon, right? It looks like a funny car.
It looks pretty weird.
It is a funny car.
It's a funny car. How about a 4K laptop? How do you feel now, Mr. Consumer? This is the...
What kind of battery life does that thing
have? Tekra W50.
Yeah, no kidding.
Really? No kidding.
That's look quick, thing, it's awesome, right? And it's gone.
Yeah, I was talking about that on Twitter this week. It's like, okay, you have all these trade-offs, right? If you really want awesome battery life, why do you have to trade off your screen resolution, right, for that? You have to pick, like, what's the most important thing instead of being able to kind of find something that's the least common denominator.
What does 4K get you today? I mean, I know there are some... aspects of this that would be interesting to people, you know, maybe in photography or...
Well, so here, just for people who wonder, it's a 15.6-inch screen, 3840 by 2160. So that's 282 pixels per inch, considerably lower than the Retina phones and so forth, Retina-style phones that we're seeing. I mean...
as far as pixels
per inch. Well, and I think you kind of rated on that. I guess you're at an arm's length, so it's not quite the same.
Well, I don't know. I just don't... I don't know. I mean, obviously, you want to just kind of do it to show that you can do it.
And well, because you get articles like this. Toshiba introduces world's first 4K laptops. They do not notably mention, this is the Microsoft Windows blog, they notably do not mention battery life.
Right.
And the other issue is, of course, you have to have and Apple learned this, you have to have a CPU that could push all those pixels. Apple's first Retina MacBooks were sluggish. I haven't bought a Toshiba laptop in a while. I don't know. Here's another one. This is a concept PC from Toshiba. The Shapeshifter.
This thing is weird. Really weird. So if you thought 2-in-1 PCs were enough, this is a 5-in-1. Yeah. I'm like, oh, come on, guys.
So there's your laptop. There's your tablet.
This makes the yoga look lazy.
There's a canvas mode and a presentation TV mode. What the hell? So... I don't know. It seems like just pieces fold off and break.
Yeah.
And
I don't know.
Like,
you know, if a Macintosh.
A
yeah, if a Mac is a BMW, this thing is like a McLaren.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even an. It's just a.
But to be fair, concept only. I mean, this isn't even something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is sometimes why CES to me seems like an exercise in futility. Mm-hmm. You see so much stuff that you're never going to see again.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor for life.
Now, I'm curious because Microsoft clearly is stung a little bit by the Chromebook. They're spending a lot of marketing dollars saying, you were scroogled by that Chromebook. But really, and as you pointed out last week, the reason Chromebooks sell is $250.
Yeah.
Are we seeing low-priced Windows PCs for that? I mean, that range?
Getting closer. They're under 400 now. They actually put a blog post up on the Windows blog this week saying, here's 4 laptops under $400.
The title, Laptops, Insanely Affordable Now.
Insanely. They're insane, too.
Affordable.
But you know what's good? Because people who haven't shopped for a laptop in a while, I think that if you haven't been in the market, you might think, it's way over $1,000 for anything usable, right? And if you haven't gone into a store looking at them and kicking the tires. But there are very decent ones that'll make a lot of people very happy for $400.
The Asus T100 TA, $350, includes Office.
Includes Office. It's multi-touch and it's a tablet.
Yeah.
It's really not that shabby. I mean, I'm not going to be replacing my personal laptop with this machine, but
wow. You know, Dell Inspiron 15R, $279.99, $280.
Yep.
15-inch screen, 4 gigs of RAM, less than an inch thick, with a pleasingly textured lid and palm rest.
Which would be nice, because you're going to be lugging this thing around.
You'll love your pleasingly textured lid and palm rest. It has a certain designery snappiness.
Designery snappiness?
That's what they say. That makes you feel like you're getting away with something for the price.
Wow.
I'm getting away with something for the price.
And it's designery.
Who wrote this? It's got tons of ports and a sweet design.
That's funny.
This is some intern. They got an intern.
Remember hard drives?
David S.
It's got one of those, too.
It doesn't even say his last name. He's so embarrassed. David S. writing on the Windows blog.
That's funny.
He's the intern. He's definitely an intern. He's from Rutgers. He's a sophomore at Rutgers. He plays basketball and hopes someday to be working in the United Nations as a translator. Meanwhile, he's interning at Microsoft, writing copy like this.
So,
a designery snappiness.
There's an article to be written here about using one of these machines, putting Chrome on it, and comparing it to Chrome, comparing it to a
Chromebook.
Well,
that's the market, right? Right?
You know?
Yeah.
We got to do something. I don't know. You know. I mean, that $280, that's something.
Yeah.
That's the lowest price of the bunch. But that's right in there.
Yep.
And it's Adele, right?
Well, and it's got a textured palm rest and a sweet design.
Does it have a heated palm rest?
Tons of ports.
That would make it really awesome.
Is that 2,000 plus pounds of ports?
Lots.
Tons.
No, why has no one ever done a heated palm rest, like for winter days?
Most laptops have automatic heated palm rest.
That's
true. It's not a selling point.
You know? How about a mouse pad that's heated?
Like palm rest cooling, I think would be.
Yes, this laptop is really hot. No, hot. We mean
really.
A hot laptop.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's our tour of CES. Aren't you glad you didn't go this year?
We tried. We tried to manufacture some excitement there. I have to say, though, I think those Lenovos are very, very interesting. And I'll just leave it at that. I think that's
every time I look at the X1 Carbon, I like my finger hovers on the buy it now. Every time. I am
thinking of buying that one. Yeah. I was kind of on a previous show saying Sony, but now I'm very much leaning to that one.
I think we all agree Lenovo is the class still, aren't they? They've kept at least at the high end. They've kept that ThinkPad elegance.
I think they've done a good job with it. The problem I have with Lenovo is, well, with ThinkPad, I should say specifically, you can't really find a place to see this anywhere.
Right.
You know? If you were going to spend $2,000 on something, I think being able to touch it and see it and evaluate the quality of the screen, it'd be nice.
Yep.
They need to figure that out. They should start Lenovo stores. And then they could have Lenovo store within a stores.
Lenovo in the Windows stores, the Microsoft stores, for those of you who have them, unlike
they do,
us.
Actually, they do have a number of Lenovo devices at the Microsoft stores.
Do they?
I'm not sure if they have ThinkPads, though. I think they might just be like the Yoga and those IdeaPad type machines. That's what they need. They need a business center at the Microsoft store.
Will this be enough to get the market turned around a little bit and get people selling? Or buying, rather. Well, selling if you're selling.
So I don't want to go over the top with the medical comparisons, but it's like a quality of life thing at this point, Leo. We're trying to slow down the effect, not stop it and turn it around. Like, we're not going to be 25 years old again, but...
Never again.
You know, go to the gym and, we can work on it.
Mary Jo, Kid Clayton tells me there's a Microsoft store in Queens.
There is.
But let me tell you, Mary Jo does not leave the borough of Manhattan for anything.
I do. I go to Queens.
Does that require crossing water?
No.
It does.
Oh, it does. Okay. Oh, yeah. Queens is Queens on the island?
Queens is almost Connecticut, Leo.
Queens is not on the Manhattan Island.
It's on Long Island.
It's over there.
It's not that funny.
Close.
It's no.
not that close. I looked up if I could get there easily, and with all the trains and switching and all that, it was going to take me about an hour and a half to get there.
And then you get over there and be like, yeah, we don't have any ThinkPads.
And then you get over there and you buy something, you get this big box, right? And then what?
I know.
I don't know.
I did that.
I'm spoiled. In fact, I'm spoiled.
The 15-inch Samsung, I carried it home from the Microsoft store. So you get in Boston. And so you get a box that's the size of a piece of luggage. It has like a handle on it. And you walk around Boston with like, please rob me. I just spent $2,000. All right. Well, $1,500 or whatever it was at the time. You know. Yeah. It's not ideal.
Just gonna get
there
some.
Is a store in Queens, though. There's a store in, there's a couple surrounding stores here. There's one in New Jersey. Paramus Mall, I think, is opening now. And yeah, we need one in Manhattan.
Or several, one might say.
Several might be good.
Wait a minute. Microsoft Store. Huh.
What are you looking for?
There's one at the Time Warner Center, but it's
just a kiosk. Literally.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've been to that one. It's a little tiny booth in a mall. Right. That's what it is. Like where you can buy cell phone covers and stuff.
The online store and to see what they have. I bet they don't even have. I mean, they'll have Lenovo.
I don't think they carry ThinkPads in the Microsoft store
online.
I'm
looking right now. So they have, IdeaPads. That's what they have. Oh, no, actually, excuse me. They have a ThinkPad X1 Carbon Touch.
But
it's the previous gen.
Okay, well, maybe they'll get the new one.
So that suggests maybe,
That's good.
They probably will get it. Even that one's expensive. That one is, you know, last year's model, third gen Intel processor, $1,700.
Wow.
And it was previously $1,900.
Mm. Yikes.
Yeah, it's big bucks.
So what you do here, you take the N22 bus.
See what I mean? Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That takes you to...
Depends on the time of day, Leo. You don't want to take that bus in the afternoon.
It takes, according to Google Maps, an hour and a half right? to get out yeah. to Hempstead.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
It could be done.
It could be done.
That easily.
It could be done. Wow. But while you're on the way, you could visit the beautiful Flushing Meadows Corona Park and the Queens Botanical Garden. Make a day of it. Beautiful Queens. Moving along.
Oh, God. I know people who talk like that. That's beautiful.
Oh, we all do. I deeply regret the loss of regional New York and others' accents in the world. I'm sorry that people like Paul feel he have to talk like, you know, Dan Rather.
Right.
Get your accent on. Get your region on, man.
A couple of beers later, it comes flying right out, Leo.
I know it does.
It's like riding a bike.
I know it does. I love it. let's see. Windows 8.1 update 1. We're not done yet.
Yeah, we have an update on update 1.
What's the update on update 1, Mary Jo Foley?
The update is... there was a screenshot leak today, in fact, on update 1 over on WZOR. I guess that's I don't think I can pronounce that word.
Wozer.
He's a leaker of many Windows things, and he put some screenshots up that he said are the update 1 internal build. He said the OEMs are going to start getting private builds of this in the next week or so, and that he believes end of March this shall
at the
same time as build, right? Which kind of is what we thought would be the case, given when build is that they would want to have that coming out around that time. So yeah, this isn't confirmed by Microsoft, but update 1 is to Windows 8.1 is supposed to be a free update to Windows 8.1. It's supposed to bring the Windows 8.1 platform more in alignment with Windows Phone 8.1, the blue release. And supposedly these two will have more common APIs because of Update 1 and Windows Phone Blue coming out about the same time. The one thing we don't know still is whether there's going to be many or any UI changes to Windows 8.1 with this release, because there's been some speculation that maybe they'll introduce a start menu to go along with the start button. And I had heard originally that was going to not be until next year, but then I've heard wavering since then that it could come sooner than that. But I'm hearing from my contacts, not in update 1. So maybe if there's an update 2 or an update 3, maybe it'll come then. But right now, all we know about is update 1. So that's your update on update 1.
Do you think that's going to be the final name? Are they going to go with this kind of Windows phony? Windows?
I know. I asked if it was going to be update... name. I thought they might call it 8.2, and I keep hearing no. So I don't know. I don't know how they're going to end up ultimately calling that, if they'll call it like Spring Update or Update 1. I would think they're going to try to bring it more in alignment with the way they name the Windows Phone updates. And so if you remember, they've been using Update with that. So like Windows Phone 8, Update 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and I think this thing, like the Windows Phone updates, is actually referred to as a GDR internally,
which stands for
General Distribution
Release.
Which has some meaning to it, in the sense that Windows 8.1 was this weird kind of update that went through the store, but this one will be delivered through Windows Update. So it's going to be like not a service pack, but like a service pack, in the sense that it will be delivered in that fashion. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, so we're getting closer. And we had kind of thought that the reason they were timing build for the spring was because they have so many things supposedly coming out in the spring. So Windows 8 update 1, 8.1 update 1, and then Windows Phone Blue supposedly is spring, maybe even the Surface Mini spring. So this makes sense to put build right around that time frame so that developers can get a jump on all this stuff.
Will we have a new
CEO? And we'll be out again visiting you, Leo.
Yeah, right. Hey, I know. Well, I'll get some cherry flavored beer for you.
Nice.
don't put yourself out, Leo.
It's okay. I have people. Probably have. I have people who get beer.
Yeah,
they're the beer people. Yes. Do you want to? I think we've done the. Well, wait a minute.
This
is phones that are dual booting Windows mm-hmm. Phone and Android. We're not talking about PCs.
Dude, right.
This is the rumors are that the Windows Phone team is looking at an Android dual boot phone. Mary Jo Foley breaks the story on ZDNet.
No, I didn't break this one, but supposedly, and now we have two reports claiming this. So last October, Bloomberg had a report saying Microsoft was going around talking to its other Windows Phone OEMs saying, hey, would you guys be interested if we could somehow let you run Android or Windows on your devices? And the thinking seems to be if you're a phone maker, you could make one generic device and then either the carrier or the customer or a store would be able to specify at the point of sale which operating system it would run. So the idea, it was just kind of floated out there, is would you guys be interested in this? This week, the information, that new publication that just launched recently, came out with a very similar report saying they're just trying all kinds of ideas and plans, saying, hey, what do you guys think? Would you want a dual booting phone? Would you be interested in running Android on Windows somehow? They're just kind of throwing all these crazy ideas out there and seeing if any of them resonate with the Windows Phone partners. Supposedly, they want to keep other partners in the fold, even though they're buying Nokia. So the ideas are kind of crazy, and it's hard to imagine how some of these might work. Is it going to be an emulator on top of Windows that would let you run Android apps? Is Microsoft actually going to fork Android? That's actually been put out there as an idea, that they could take the open source version of Android and create their own distribution, the way that Amazon does on the Kindle. Yeah, I know. All these things sound crazy. It's like, wow, really? Microsoft Android? But it sounds... I've asked some of my sources, and it sounds like, yes, they are asking around about this stuff.
Well, I think that's prudent, probably. I mean...
it is.
It doesn't mean they're going to do it. It just means it's on the table.
It doesn't.
And it would only be prudent to have every possible option on the table.
Yep.
Especially when you're 4.7% or whatever it is of the market. You gotta look at other options.
Yeah.
It's like saying, Microsoft considering dumping Windows Phone. Well, I'm sure that's one of the options.
It sounds like a crazy headline, but right.
It doesn't mean they're going to do it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like we talked about this sometime in the past year, this notion that this is what they should do. I think it was maybe in the context of the HTC X1 and, mm-hmm. Why couldn't HTC just make that device and have it run Windows Phone too?
Right.
I mean, why?
Right. HTC's in enough trouble. They could try stuff.
Yeah.
Microsoft does say record sales of Windows phones during the holiday period. Is that credible? What does that mean, record sales?
Well, they're not. That's the problem. So we don't have a number to say this is what it was and this is what it is. But I think what they did say was that it was roughly double what it was in the holiday period a year ago.
Well, a year ago, though, what was the predominant Windows phone? That's pre-Nokia.
A year ago, the Lumia 920
was the 920? Okay.
Mm-hmm. The HTC 8X had come out.
Okay.
Samsung had announced, but I don't think they had actually shipped their.
It's
what are we calling it? Ative S or whatever. Yeah. I think that was about it.
It's such a different landscape than a year ago.
It is. Yeah, but those numbers over on NeoWin, I think Paul, you tweeted about those too. There are, I think, more than a dozen markets now where Windows Phone is in double digits.
Yes. It's the number two mobile OS.
Which is surprising, right? Because everybody's 12, like, oh,
14 markets.
Yeah. India, Mexico, Italy, Chile, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia, Poland, South Africa, Ukraine, Hungary, Finland, Czech Republic, and Greece. And there are 24 markets where Windows Phone is actually beating the iPhone. Chile, Colombia, Czech Republic, Egypt. I think these are places where the iPhone's not sold. But I don't
yeah,
know.
That could be.
Ecuador, Finland, of course, because of Nokia.
Yeah, and places that have India. Very strict price issues, you know. Right.
Saudi yeah, Arabia.
Fair enough. But I mean, okay. You know, but that's like saying, well, the iPhone does, you know, outsells Android in the United States and in one or two other markets because those people are rich. You know, it's like, well, yeah, okay, we can qualify it. I mean, but it's, you know, it's still, it's an interesting stat. And it's the type of thing I know that drives Apple people bonkers, which is actually why I like it so much. But, you know, it's just so, it's so beautiful, self-serving. But yeah, I think the problem for Windows Phone, the kind of realistic view of this, and the thing that I've said about this kind of thing in the past is that, you know, there are other issues at stake here. I mean, Windows Phone had a spectacular year on many notes. But for that to happen, the Lumia 520 had to happen, a device that sells for $99 without a contract. And that's kind of like a volume market, but it's not a very profitable market. And so is the future of Windows Phone kind of this bargain basement thing? And if it is, we're screwed because Android can compete very effectively in that market. And in fact, I would say one of the big changes, one of the biggest changes in the mobile landscape of last year happened right at the end of the year when Google started selling devices through Motorola to target this market, two of them. They're very, very interesting. And they already have the Nexus stuff, which also targets the same market. So I wouldn't get too complacent if I were running Windows Phone right now.
I think, though, this is the story for all smartphones, is that all the growth is going to happen in the cheap side.
Yeah, and it's a problem. It's a problem for Apple in some ways, although Apple, you know,
Apple's just like it says, forget it. I don't care. We don't want Apple's, that market. We're not BMW, going after it. Yeah.
Yep.
They never have.
Yeah, and they're going to be successful with that.
Their margins are excellent. They don't care.
Right. But, you know, I look at the mobile market like the PC market. And the PC and Windows PCs became kind of a force because of the volume. And they sold at lower prices than Macs. And so that was like 95% of the market for a long, long time. I think in the mobile space, that stuff is happening to Android. And so it was a great year for Windows Phone, but it's still single-digit market share, you know, worldwide. And still huge problems in countries like the United States and China, which are the two biggest smartphone markets in the world.
Avro is pointing out that, you know, Nokia did sell out to Microsoft this year. So it wasn't like the 520 was such a moneymaker that.
Right. And actually, you could even amplify that a little bit. You asked what were the phones from last year, and I said the 920. The 920 was Nokia's, you know, flagship device a year, 15 months ago, whatever. In the subsequent amount of time, they have shipped such devices as the 928 on Verizon, the 925 on T-Mobile in the United States and other countries as well. The 1020 and the 1520. And none of these devices have really sold spectacularly well. They all have subtle or dramatic improvements over the 920, depending on which one we're talking about. They're all great phones in their own right. I mean, I actually think each of those is, especially when you think about when they were released, is a spectacular device. I posted some photos today that I took for the 1020. I still think the 1020 is one of the most amazing digital devices ever created. But the fact remains, when you look at Windows Phone usage share, don't even look at the rest of the market. Just look at Windows. Within the scope of Windows Phone sales, nobody uses these devices. They're single-digit usage share. They're non-existent on the, you know, top 10, top 20, however you want to look at it. They just don't factor for the most part. Whereas the 520, the 521, you know, those low-end devices, 620, they do. And that's what people are buying. And so that's the reality of the market. I don't think Nokia makes any money on those devices. So it's, you know, absolutely that's a problem. Why doesn't anyone buy the 1020? I love it so much.
Yeah.
You know? Too much camera for the average person.
Too much camera, yeah. Is it too good?
Not even that.
Is the quality too high? What's the problem?
The iPhone is plenty
It is. And for somebody like me, like it's so much overkill. It's amazing. But I don't need a camera that good.
Mary Jo, if you didn't write about Microsoft, face it, you'd be an iPhone user.
No, I wouldn't.
Come on, admit it. No, really? Why not?
I think I'd probably be an Android user.
Really?
Because most people in my family are Android users, I think, now.
See, Apple should be scared if that's the case.
Yeah.
Well,
what you want to be is the default choice. That's what made Windows so successful. It was the choice, the default.
You know, I hate to agree with Apple's strategy. No, I don't mean to say it like that, but in the United States, things are a little skewed because in the United States, Apple in the smartphone market has an abnormally high usage and market share compared to the rest of the world. I don't know if it's because it's home market or because we like to spend money on things. I have no idea why, but that's just a fact. And so we tend to look at Apple like they're just generally very successful. But I think if you look at a lot of different important markets around the world, they are getting destroyed, you know, from a unit sales perspective by Android. Mm-hmm. So
I also like having a device choice, right? Like, yeah. I want to have a choice of form factors.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just preaching to the converted, but I'm just, I notice, and maybe, I'm in the U.S.
Right.
Everybody has an iPhone. It's like the default choice.
You're not just in the U.S. You're in Northern California near San Francisco, too. I mean, that's a bubble within a bubble.
But even when I travel, that does seem to be the default choice.
I don't know. Just going around Boston, on public transportation and stuff. I see iPhones.
Yeah.
I see way more Android devices. Mm. That's absolutely.
Yeah, I'm seeing more and more Android.
It's shifted.
Too.
It's definitely shifting. Yeah. Unfortunately,
anyway,
it's
but
not
as to whether that's concerning,
Lumias,
I don't think we don't have a huge stake in the Apple thing. So, Apple has tons of money and makes tons of money, and they're obviously going to be fine for a long time and can forge ahead with new markets if they want and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. They're going to be fine. I
think about it a lot because I frankly wonder why. It doesn't feel to me like the iPhone is a great choice. But my kids, there's no number two. It's like iPhone. That's what we all have is iPhones.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the kids want anymore.
I don't know what they want. They want BBM. They can't wait to get
a Chromebook, and they want a BlackBerry.
They want a BlackBerry and a Chromebook. That will be happy.
Both of those are the future. What do they have in common, Leo? They both have keyboards.
The kids love the keyboards because you know what they're doing. They're Snapchatting and they're. No, wait a minute. That's wrong.
I don't know.
Isn't Snapchat all about chat?
Is it? I don't even know what it is.
It's in the name. I don't know. I sent a naked picture of myself to Paul, and he never responded.
Oh, my kids loved it. They hung it up next to the Christmas cards.
Sorry.
A bit of good news on the Lumia front. A little more good news, even. The Lumia 929, that rumored 5-inch phone on Verizon, the icon for that just appeared in the Verizon store just a few minutes ago. So maybe
icon that
is coming. It's the 1080p display, 5-inch.
That's the one you're waiting for, Mary Jo.
That's the one I'm waiting for, thin one.
That's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a thin one. Yay. Not a brick.
This is
not going to
be
one of those
the camera from
bricks.
The 1520, which is fantastic, in a nice thin Verizon.
So where you said an icon appear? I mean, I'm looking at Verizon store right now.
Yeah.
I've seen
both The Verge and WM Power User, they say there is the Lumia icon has now appeared in the Verizon store with a 5-inch 1080p display,
the Lumia.
Making people think, there it is, that's the 929.
In the online?
I think you have to log in.
What is an icon, Mary Jo? Explain, please.
it's like a render, more like a render, an image. You could see it's a 5-inch, like a big screen thing. It looks a lot like the 1520, that big screen phone that is on AT&T right now. It's big. It's a big screen.
All right, let me shop phones and devices, smartphones.
They should announce this at CES. Why aren't they announcing it?
I know. I thought they were going to. I had heard some scuttlebutt, but maybe it'll be right after CES.
Well, when I go there, all I see is iPhones.
iPhones.
Let's check the Windows phone box.
It's like, hey, welcome to Verizon. Can I help you with your iPhone order?
I know. I keep getting postcards from Verizon here saying, you're up for an upgrade. Don't you want a new iPhone? No, I don't.
928, Ativ Odyssey, and the 8X. So.
Yeah, I don't think it has the words 929. I think there's just a render or a picture of it somewhere.
Right. Boy, those guys at The Verge is sharp eyes. They've got sharp eyes. Somebody tweeted it.
Yeah, I'm sure someone sent it to me.
Big story, of course, always at CES. Ever since Ford announced its new car, not at the Detroit Auto Show about 5 years ago now, but at CES, everybody there's there. It's Audi, BMW, Ford, Hyundai. Everybody's there. One of the things Audi announced is Android on its next generation platform. In fact, there's even a standard that. Other Ford hardware manufacturers.
Isn't
other car
Audi part of Volkswagen?
Yeah.
So Volkswagen is not part of this alliance, and Volkswagen has deals with somebody else. I don't remember who. Possibly.
It's the Open Automotive Alliance. And much like the Open Handset Alliance, the idea being...
Basically, well, the idea being we're going to pretend that Android is open.
Yeah.
So we'll put that right in the name.
Yeah.
and
put it in every car.
Yeah. Well, they got some big backers, right? Some big car companies, but also some car companies that aren't involved, like the biggest in the world, for example, Toyota and VW, which has to be number two.
So they got Audi, GM, Honda, and Hyundai.
A lot of car solutions this year. Apple announced that iOS in the car last year. I don't believe there's a car you could buy in the United States that doesn't come with at least optional iPhone connectivity, but
right.
You know, whatever they're doing that, you want to do the in-dash thing. I have to say that the biggest benefit to Android in a car would have to be in-dash Google Maps, right? I mean, I have to think that would be very valuable to many, many people.
I have that in my Audi already.
In your Audi?
I do.
When you take Lovey out for a drive.
Lovey, look. You can see what the little people are doing. It even has Street View. So it's really interesting.
You don't even have to look at them when you drive by.
Because they take the people out.
It's nice. You can drive through those awful parts of town.
I don't have to look at them. I just can close my eyes.
I don't even see them.
It does the Google Earth for the nav. This is a paid feature, by the way, because you have to have a T-Mobile SIM in your car. Because it has to download this stuff in real time.
Yep.
So it does Google Earth for the nav, and when you want, you can zoom even farther and see Street View. It's weird to be driving somewhere and actually see the Street View of what you're driving through. It's very strange.
It's only a matter of time before you can see your car in the Street View as you drive.
They were talking about that this morning on TNT, is that more and more what we're seeing is a move towards live view, and it's only a matter of time before.
You can tell, because if you're familiar with an area, you can see, like, there'll be construction, and you can say, well, it's weird, that was 2 weeks ago. Or
My house on Street View is still being built, and that was 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, it depends, but you're...
They didn't drive down my little cul-de-sac. No, it's a cul-de-sac. Yeah. I can't even believe the Google Street View car even went there. They must have gone there and said, what the hell? Let's get out of here fast.
I've been meaning to check. The Google guys were driving by when I was walking this fall. I should look around my neighborhood and see if any of those Street Views.
Yeah.
I'll be the guy giving you the finger while I'm using a Windows phone.
I think it's great. I would moon them. Because it's funny.
Just
because
in case there's any.
Then they have to blur out the moon so it looks even worse.
Right.
We're going, what the hell is he doing?
What am I looking at?
There's a flesh colored blob, but I don't get it. what is that? Don't make Mary Jo laugh. I'm just telling you.
Don't make me laugh.
I'll start coughing
again. I know.
Mary Jo, respect. Deep respect.
Thanks.
Because I know exactly how you feel.
And let's not embarrass ourselves, Mary Jo, by laughing uncontrollably on a podcast. That would just
let's not do that, please.
Was that in the best?
Horribly unprofessional.
I just got to point out the Windows Weekly Best Of was like 3 hours long.
I know. Somebody told me that.
There was too much good stuff. It was such a good year for Windows Weekly. Your headline is great. I presume Paul wrote this. car tech. No one can win in the living room, so we're moving on. We're moving to the garage. It's just Paul's sense of humor, isn't it?
It is.
Right. Well, here's something we could win. But actually, I think the car thing is just as messy as the living room. I think this is going to work out to be all kinds of different stuff. And I don't know why it would be advantageous for a car maker, which wants to differentiate its products from other companies, to have the same thing that everyone else has.
The real problem is that the car development cycle is so slow compared to technology development cycle that you're always going to look behind. So, for instance, I have a T-Mobile SIM in my car, but it's 3G. They've only now just announced that they're going to go 4G next year.
Nano SIM.
Yeah. And so, but of course, because, and then there's also, and I think this is not insignificant, the very real issue of hacking, that you don't want your car's computer system to be reachable via from the telematics computer system. So that means you got to have security or two systems, or this is a non-trivial challenge. And who's been making all the money up to now? Microsoft with Microsoft Car. And QNX, that's the other one. It's a real-time operating system owned by...
Which is what Nokia is using, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's owned by BlackBerry, of all people.
Yeah. I have to think that, especially for younger people buying cars, although fewer younger people are buying cars than ever before, but that technology has to be a big part of that purchase. That going into this, there is an assumption that you will at least offer Bluetooth where I can connect to any type of phone.
Right.
And possibly a cable where I can get my, music from the device, or I can access my online services and have them play through the stereo or whatever. That has to be an absolute minimum for almost everybody these days, buying a new car.
Yeah, I mean, this Audi is 2014. It has a 30-pin connector for an iPhone. It moves too fast. Yep. So you do it at your peril. Bluetooth is a good... I think you could stick with Bluetooth, although LE is going to change everything. And really, you should have LE in a car. And you can beacon as you drive down the road. Here I am.
If you have a Windows phone and you get in your car, it will say something like, "We have turned on driving mode."
Yeah.
And every time this happens, everyone in my vehicle, whoever it is, thinks that my car said that. And that is the most impressive thing they've ever heard.
Hello, Paul.
It's like, no, my car is technologically disadvantaged. That was my phone.
But see, that was the smart move Ford made. They said, look, we can never keep up. So what we're going to do is have an interface to the phone and let the phone do all of it. Bring in the connectivity, have the apps. They can update that. So we're going to make an API. That was, I think, very smart.
Because when it comes to car safety, what you want is a person staring into their tiny iPhone screen looking for the right track.
Hello, Paul.
While they're driving around.
Where is that folder icon? Why did Microsoft not have anything to say this CES about cars?
They were
every
the one.
Every year they have a ton.
They were the one.
They've had a Microsoft automotive thing every year for 10 years.
You know
years.
Why?
They've
I changed think they're losing like market 18 share. Times. They're losing market share rapidly.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's crazy.
I just thought it was very strange because every year I'm so inundated with all the Windows Automotive press releases from them, and I didn't hear a peep.
This year, nothing.
Yeah. Interesting.
I looked them up because I wasn't sure. No, obviously we don't.
I'm sorry.
They announced something with Kia last year, so Kia does something.
Kia, isn't that a big name?
But I think, it's off the top of my head, but I think Fiat and possibly Nissan are the two other companies that it partners with.
I think the whole...
Are you all right, Leo? Leo, you look like... This is like a look that I expect from my children and or my pets.
What?
When they have done something wrong... And they're trying to pretend that nothing happened. What happened?
Nothing. I didn't do it. Alan Mulally isn't going to do it either. He's finally, what do you call it? Got off the pot, so to speak. The Ford board you talked about 4 weeks ago has been begging Alan Mulally to end the speculation that he would be the CEO at Microsoft. And unaccountably, Mulally has stayed silent. Finally, he says, "I'm staying at Ford."
Bastard. Bastard.
Now, I don't know if this is worth parsing his exact words or not. It wasn't exactly definitive.
Right.
He's going to stay at Ford at least through 2014. Well, now we know Microsoft's looking for a CEO this year, so that means he won't be taking the job this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it means in the future.
It also doesn't mean he won't take the chairman's job if that becomes available.
You're right.
Yeah.
A lot of speculation that nobody's going to want the CEO job if they've got Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates on the board breathing down their necks.
That is so much crap.
Not true.
Sorry.
Mary Jo disagrees. Apparently.
I don't know. When I saw that story, think about this. Are you going to apply or be talking to Microsoft about the CEO job if you don't want to work with Bill and Steve? They've set up this whole company. They're on the board for at least another year. They are the ones who put the reorg in motion. This is their company, pretty much, right? If you don't agree with these policies they put in place, why are you even talking to them? Go be a CEO somewhere else, right? I don't know. That is a really weird argument. There's other jobs out there if you don't like the way Microsoft is structured. And I don't see why you would come in and try to change everything if knowing you're going to face a lot of uphill battle and you're going to face a lot of problems with Bill and Steve. I don't know. That whole, it just felt like very circular reasoning to me when I read that article. I think it's more
the Wall Street doesn't want
Bill and Steve on the board. Some people on the street don't want him on the board.
Yeah.
Right.
Not so sure about the candidates.
Directors on, this is from the Wall Street Journal article, Shira Ovid, Spencer Ante, and Joanne Lublin writing. Wait a minute, though. This is really old. This is from October. There must be another.
Yeah. They have a new one that they did over the holidays. Yeah. The journal did.
I guess they got pretty close, right? December?
Yeah.
And maybe that's when the Alan Mulally thing happened. I mean, maybe that was the timing of it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying, they're putting two and two together, saying the Wall Street Journal said nobody wants this job because of Bill and Steve. And that's why Alan Mulally decided to say no.
What?
No, yeah. I love that, yes.
There's any causation here.
False syllogism. I declare.
It's, one made up statement, and then telephone game occurs.
I mean, the most believable thing I saw about Mulally, I forget whose story this was, said next week the Detroit Auto Show, I think, kicks off. So he wanted to make sure this question didn't keep coming up over and over and over. Well, I should say Ford wanted to make sure this didn't keep coming up, right?
Right.
So they said to him, look, it's
somebody
time.
Was quoted saying, right? They don't ask us about the Mustang. They don't ask us about earnings. They ask us what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a tough.
That would be the only thing anybody would want to talk about, right?
So this is also from Shira Ovid and Joanne Lublin. They write, John Thompson says, who's, of course, leading the search and is on the board, says the board is methodically seeking the right person for a complex role. But corporate directors, management consultants, and some executives contacted, none of whom apparently work at Microsoft, about the job, say the potential for boardroom clashes at Microsoft is a turnoff.
So I'll halt that right there. There's a quote there. It says, no CEO worthy of the title once, blah, blah, blah. From Jean-Louis Gasset.
Exactly.
All right. I think we need a statute of limitations on people who haven't worked at Apple in 20 years, haven't run a company that amounted to anything ever, and has nothing to do with this topic.
But basically, he's talking about John Sculley, Steve Jobs.
Why would you quote this guy?
Well, he does write the Monday Note, which is a pretty good analytic blog. But you're right. He's kind of been out of it for a while.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A former
buddy
Apple executive.
Of one of the authors. It's like nepotism. That's gross.
I quote Jean-Louis all the time. Right. He has a very good blog. The Monday Note blog is a very good. But you're right.
Back when B was still a thing, he wrote a blog. So this would have been like the late mid-90s. I don't even know. A long time ago. I used to find it very interesting. Yeah. But like 20 years ago.
Might point out that as they do in this article, that Alan Mulally, CEO of Ford, has Bill Ford Jr. looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
It's always been that way. Although it was Bill who brought him in, who said, we got to go outside the family this time.
I I'm pretty sure Alan Mulally can do whatever he wants at Ford these days.
I think so. And now that he's going to stay for at least 2014.
They're going to come out with the Ford Mulally Mobile.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So do we want it? Do we care? I mean, what do we... The list narrows.
Yeah.
It's basically what we've said all along. Elop, Bates, Nadella.
But we don't know who on the outside, and I'm sure there are other outside candidates. I'm Paul Moritz. Paul Moritz, already, who used to work at Microsoft as one of the big bosses back in the 90s and 2000s. He has said he feels he's too old and he's out. So we know he's not in the running. But we don't even know.
Is he older than Gates and Ballmer?
Sorry?
Is Moritz older than Gates and Ballmer?
No, he's about their age.
So this is what, mid to late 50s?
Yeah.
It's the prime of your life, I'd like to point out. It's where
Yes. And why do you say that, Leo?
It's when you're most vigorous.
Is it really? Well, I have something to look forward to.
Because
right now I feel like I'm on death's doorstep. So you're saying that in 10 years it's going to get better.
Let me tell you, 57's the new 37, my friend.
I'm so glad
you've got
to hear
the knowledge,
that.
The wisdom.
So contrary to
And thanks to
my
medical science,
thus far.
You've got all the spunk of a 25-year-old.
Yeah. I need that.
Good to know.
After this cold, I was just lying in bed going, kill me, take me now.
Yeah, just take me.
Take me now, Lord.
Right, exactly.
I've done all I want to do. Just put me out of my misery. Fortunately, God has stopped listening to me a long time ago.
Yeah.
So even if Ballmer and Gates left the board, guess who the number one and number two shareholders at Microsoft would be?
Right.
Yep. Although shifting positions a little bit, according to this story from Mary Jo Foley, Steve Ballmer may well be the number one shareholder of Microsoft this year.
I know. This is kind of a crazy one because I think it's kind of defies what a lot of people just assume. You know, Gates has been the largest shareholder for quite a while, if not always. Largest independent shareholder, I should say.
There are larger institutional shareholders?
Yeah, there are.
Ah,
yeah.
Interesting.
But Gates owns about right now 4.5% of Microsoft shares. Ballmer owns 4. Gates is selling them off at about 20 million shares a quarter, I believe.
That's to fund his foundation.
Right. And he said he wants to basically give away all his money by the time he dies.
All but like a billion or something. He's going to.
Right. Just a little for his kids.
Leave to, yeah. to Junior.
Right. But yeah, so Ballmer, this was actually a Computer World story. They did the math. They went back, looked at all the SEC filings, and they said if things stay on the course they're on right now, Ballmer is going to be the biggest independent Microsoft shareholder as of mid-2014. Very soon.
He told you he treasures his Microsoft stock.
He does.
I treasure it. It's my retirement.
So all these people saying, kick him off the board. You don't want him on the board. He's not going to go, guys. He is proud to be a big shareholder, and he wants a say.
Well, I mean, admittedly, the board has a say 4 times a year, but sure.
They do.
A number one shareholder has some input.
He has some input.
Yes. Especially if he's
welcome
formerly
to attend that shareholders meeting. They have in the audience and stand in line at a microphone and possibly
Hello.
Ask a question.
My name is Steve Ballmer. I'm retired.
Sorry,
I have a question for the
really
board.
Is there any corn?
the lunch today, will it have...
Decidedly non-standard, not substandard.
Man, you guys.
Oh, it's such an image. I'm sorry. I'm amusing mostly myself at this point. Surface update, Orama, and the Battle of the Consoles coming up. Also, Mary Jo's Beer of the Week, Codename of the Week, Enterprise Pick of the Week, Paul's Tip and Software. There's a lot more to come on Windows Weekly. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. We love these guys. They came by the studio. Now it's been a couple of months. To show us what they were up to. They were very inspired, apparently, by the screensavers. If you go to their website, itpro.tv/ww, and take a look at the videos there, you'll see immediately, these guys, this looks like the screensavers. This looks like, in fact, Very much influenced by what we're doing here at the Brick House. They have the same mics, the same cameras, the same switcher. But instead of the kind of general programming we do, they focus on one thing, getting you trained, getting you the certs that you need to become an IT professional, whether it's the Cisco or the CompTIA, the Microsoft certs. They're dedicated to giving you entertaining, informative programming to help you get certified. How about that? They tell stories. They share experiences. They engage you. That makes it easier to remember the content than any study guide or class. There are hundreds of hours of content, 20 hours added each week. And what I really love is you can watch live, very much like us. They have a chat room so you can ask questions. If you watch live, you can get in there and you can say, well, okay, well, show me this or explain this. You get one low monthly rate with all access membership, constant updates. This is cheaper than going to an IT boot camp. There is an easy, no-hassle cancellation, of course. In fact, once you get that great job, you can cancel, although I think a lot of people keep watching because they learn. They're learning. This is great even for IT pros. It's IT Pro TV. So, in fact, they even organize the library via exam objectives. So you can say, I need to study, you know, Part 3, questions 8 through 24, and you can find that. They also have a Roku channel, so you can watch on your big screen TV. I know a lot of people keep IT Pro TV running all the time because it's just you soak it in. I want you to try it right now. Let's see, are they live now? When they're like us. When they're not live, they do pre-records. Let's just watch a little bit here.
We set the time. And as soon as I set the time, I got a nice little message letting me know that it was set. And look what it says. Yep. It set it, and it set it for 2:14 UTC. Or that's what time it was. Now it's 16:16 UTC. UTC is the universal time code. It's also called Zulu time, Greenwich Mean Time.
I love these guys, and I think they really bring it alive. I want you to take a look at it right now. Here's the deal we're going to do for you. If you go to itpro.tv/ww, browse around. You could check it out. Upgrade your brain with the most popular certifications all employers recognize. Check out the free preview. Normally, the subscriptions, I think, are very affordable. $57 a month, $570 if you get a whole year. But as fans of TWIT, they've offered us a special deal. If you use our offer code WW50, Windows Weekly, WW50, you'll get 50% off your subscription for the life of your account, $28.50 a month, $285 for the year. That's a great deal. That's cheaper than one of those books, 2 months worth. It's worth one book. And much, much more informative. IT Pro, itpro.tv/ww. Don't forget the offer code, WW50. No. Then it's more than setting the clock. Somebody said, setting the clock. I know how to do that.
And so now my clock is wrong. Right. So we'll fix that in a second.
They're talking about getting the system clock correct as a key part.
Summer-time, EDT.
You got to set your servers up. This is all stuff you need to know in the test. Believe me. ITPro.TV. And yes, you will know how to set your clock via the command line. Like a real man. Like a real IT professional. All right, Leo Laporte, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We've had our break. It's time to continue on with Windows Weekly and an update-o-rama on one Surface. Who wants to take this one? Is this you, Paul?
Right. How about Mary Jo does the first one and I'll do the second.
All right, fair enough.
All right. Yep, so we talked on the show recently about a problem that some of the Surface 2 users were having with the BitLocker key. Remember this, Leo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so when they were putting their machine into sleep or powering down and powering back up, they were being asked for their BitLocker key. They had to enter that to get back into their machine.
And you could get that. Gave you a nice, convenient link right to the SkyDrive site.
Yeah, with all those numbers. Yeah, so now they fixed that. And this week they issued a fix for the BitLocker recovery key problem. It's available to you via Windows Update. The one that we're still missing, though, is the patch for the Surface Pro 2, which when Microsoft issued their December firmware updates, the one that was out for the Surface Pro 2 ended up killing battery life for a number of customers in a very, very severe way. Some people couldn't even boot at all. Some were getting 2 hours battery life after applying the update. Microsoft ended up pulling it from Windows Update because it was such a disaster. They said that they were going to try to get it done as soon as possible, a replacement firmware update. Initially, they said it was going to be after the holidays, and they said, no, we're going to work through the holidays and get it out. So now it sounds like maybe next week as part of Patch Tuesday, you might see that, the one for the Surface Pro 2. So there are two different updates. The BitLocker recovery key is for Surface 2. That's the ARM-based new Surface. The one that's the botched Microsoft firmware update is for the Surface Pro 2 based on Intel. And that one is probably not till next week, sadly.
All right. And Paul, you had anything to add there?
Eh.
And we have a show title.
I think she covered it pretty well.
She said it all. Well, let's go to the Battle of the Consoles. I know that's a big Mary Jo Foley story.
That is. I'm ready for that one.
In fact,
Hadoop console.
I love. Can I just say I love Hyper-V? I'm just saying.
I did.
So Microsoft, I saw just now on the page, says 3 million sold on the Xbox One. Sony says 4.2 million.
Right.
Damn, they're winning the horse race.
Yeah, they are and they aren't. You know, I made this observation earlier when they had provided earlier numbers, and I looked at this now, and the Xbox One is available in far fewer markets, and they had made that decision earlier on. Remember, sometime between E3 and the fall, they cut the number of markets they were going to launch to pretty dramatically. And Sony did not. And so I actually questioned this number, but apparently they're available in 53 different markets right now. The PS4 is, compared to 13 for Xbox One.
Well, that makes a big difference, right?
That makes a difference. They've been on sale a little bit longer. And of course their device costs $100 less. And I think that makes a big difference. We all know.
Halo comes out, and they've promised us Halo this year.
Yeah.
Everything's going to change.
I think things even out this year big time. I think when I look over this year, I see Microsoft with a better overall strategy around entertainment and all that, and I see them having a better exclusive game library, you know, that their console exclusives are...
As much as the Xbox One is a media center, love it as a media center, ultimately games are what sells these things.
And there are no amazing games. And actually, I have to say, that makes these figures pretty impressive because these launches were bigger than any launch these companies had ever had. I went and tried to figure out if this was bigger than the Wii launch. I mean, the Wii was the biggest thing ever. It's a console that has sold over 100 million units over the course of its life and was unavailable. I want to say for the first 15 months, you basically just couldn't get it. It was constantly sold out. But I'm not positive they sold, 3 or 4 million units in the first month and a half or whatever. I don't know. I mean, if they didn't, it was probably just because of constrained supply. But this is a pretty strong launch. I mean, for a market that I've often described as being dead. So we'll see how this year goes. But I think that the release of games like Titanfall, the Tom Clancy game we've been talking about, Halo 5, all that stuff is going to be a big deal for
that. As one of our chat room folks does point out, as far as international goes, that neither PS4 or Xbox One is available in Japan yet. And that is, a traditional Sony market. So,
yep. Right.
Opening that market will help Sony.
If Xbox One was available in 40 more markets... par with the PS4, I think that would make a much bigger difference than just Japan.
And, it's not even, who cares? 3 million, 4 million,
Well, Leo.
Is that important? You care. Okay.
So, I
guess you have to have the units out there for game developers to say. Yeah. But look, you're going to develop for the Xbox One. You're not going to.
I don't think anyone. If you're a Electronic Arts or Activision or whatever, and you're making some high-profile shooter game, you're going to be in both these consoles.
Yeah.
This, you know, unless you strike some kind of crazy deal.
But now, I do wonder what the Steam box, and we're seeing, I think, 13 or 14 manufacturers, PC manufacturers, step up saying, yeah, we're going to do one, everything from, you know, a $5,000 Alienware.
You know, I'm not really sure that's ever going to amount to anything. And again, that's going to hinge on a lot of different things, but one of the bigger ones is going to be the game library availability.
Yeah, because it's not Windows. It's not Windows Steam. It's Linux.
It's a Linux thing. Yeah. So, you know, it will happen. I think Steam has done a decent job of porting games to the Mac, for example, and I'm sure the game library will be there. But you know, the Steam stuff, I just don't. It's to me, this is just too complex. I think that the Xbox and the PlayStation kind of satisfy this need, and that if there are other needs for, you know, video gaming, they're met by such things as portable devices, phones, tablets, the Wii U, you know, whatever. This is already a pretty crowded market. I'm not really clear what the point of that is, beyond the fact that they want to expand their business.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they can't put Steam on Xbox.
Right. They can't. It is on PS4 or 3.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But not PS4, I don't think. All right. Let's get, as long as you're here.
Let's get Mary Jo bowed out?
I turned her mic off in case you wanted to hack. Gargling is good.
She's just walking around the block. You know, they're talking about Xbox again. I don't know how this happened.
It disappeared. I'm out of here. So let us talk about
Xbox, as it turns out.
Your tip of the week, which is, yeah.
Actually, Xbox related. Sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Mary Jo. Take another walk.
All right. One of the things I've been very eager to test with the Xbox One is game sharing. Game sharing with a disc-based game works exactly as you'd expect. In fact, it's one of those things I've been using an Xbox for years, and I don't really think about this stuff too much, but were I to buy a game, and it's, you know, $60 in a store, and I bring it home and I play it on my Xbox, if my son wants to play that game, I hand him the disc and he goes. There's no copy protection that prevents that, right? He needs the disc, but, you know, it's simple enough. When you have digitally available games, as we do now on the 360 as well, and from day one on the Xbox One, you know, things are a little more interesting. And Microsoft had talked about having a family sharing plan, which they dropped because everybody complained so much about DRM and whatever other nonsense ruined the Xbox One. But whatever. But they still have some kind of game sharing functionality. So game sharing on a single console is easy enough to understand. You install a game that you've downloaded from the store, it works.
Paul, we're just going to have to end the show right now. I've just received my Mac Pro. Goodbye. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you.
Wow. Okay. Open that box during the show. I will fly out there.
Just a trash can.
Just a very fancy trash can. But Mary Jo, did you turn yourself down because you're a little quiet?
She probably coughed into the microphone and
I can't go on.
Better now or not better?
I want to thank Ed, WA6AXX, for sending me this little puppy. We'll do an unboxing after the show.
So,
what were you saying, Paul?
On a single console, it's, which I think is the most common scenario.
That's what we wanted to do because we were playing with Anthony's during our New Year's Eve show. We were playing with. I can't remember somebody's Xbox One, and I wanted.
He bought it. You signed in. It still worked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and that works fine.
Yeah. Now, if I own a game,
what if there are two consoles?
Oh,
right.
Ew.
You know, my son got an Xbox One for Christmas.
Yeah.
Or, I'm a teenager, not really, but if I was a teenager, my friend had an Xbox One, and we wanted to do some kind of a game.
And that's very common. That's kind of...
How does that work?
You have buddies.
Actually, as it turns out, it works really well, but there's a trick to it, because the Xbox One has this notion of home Xbox, you know, that obviously the Xbox I use is my home Xbox, and the other ones I use are other Xboxes. They're right, not my home
right,
Xbox.
Right.
And so if I install games on someone else's Xbox, for them to use that game, they would have to sign in as me. So if I come here and I start playing a game, they would get signed out because, you know, I'm me and I'm signed in. But if you want to share within a house, actually, there's a pretty simple way to do it, assuming you only have two Xboxes, which is I sign into my son's console and I assign that to be the home Xbox.
Oh.
He signs into my console and he makes that his home Xbox. And what that means is I can now play his games on my console without him having to sign in and vice versa. And it's a very simple system because anytime I sit down in front of the Xbox, of course, I'm going to sign in anyway. But once you've established that the Xbox is your home Xbox,
yeah,
among other things, you can share any of your games with anyone who uses that console. And so it's kind of a neat little trick. If you want to share games between two consoles in your house, just make the one you don't use normally the home Xbox. And then there'll be no signing in silliness. It just works fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, kind of a cool thing.
Very cool. Let's see here. Your software pick of the week.
Yeah, so I'm probably one of three people in the world that uses Xbox Music, but I really like it, and it's improved dramatically this past year. They've added support for multiple platforms. It's on Xbox One, it's on iOS, it's on Android, it's on the web, you know, it's everywhere. The problem is that the mobile clients that they put out so far aren't, you know, full or haven't been full featured. So iOS and Android up until today, you could stream online, but you couldn't do downloading and play things offline like you could on Windows. And the version, they added a Xbox Music 2 came out today for iOS, and they've added the ability to finally to download from the app. And so you have to have an Xbox Music Pass subscription to do that. But you can now download music to your iPhone or your iPod Touch or an iPad, although it's only it's a phone app. It's not the full-size tablet app. The weird part about it is it's only for playlists. So you can make a playlist available offline, which obviously downloads those songs. But you can't go in and arbitrarily download an album or a song or some selection of songs. You can't download anything else. It's just playlists. And so obviously there were workarounds there. But, you know, you could easily copy an album into a new playlist or whatever. But I'm not really sure why they did that. I mean, this is one of those things whenever they released this app last fall, they said, we are going to be adding offline support. Kind of expected it by the end of last year. And so now it's here, but it's only for playlists. And I don't quite understand why that is. But it works pretty well. It works fine. I inadvertently made my iPhone one of my Xbox-managed devices somehow just by installing the app. But that means I can now download music to it. So seeing that I had done that, I started to download some music just to test it. And it works, you know, as you would expect. So
that's exciting.
Yeah, kind of a neat expansion of Xbox Music.
Yay. That's nice. And it just shows, I think this is important in a way because Microsoft says we don't want to deprecate iOS.
Right.
You know, it kind of answers the people who say, well, they're never going to put their best stuff on iOS.
We'll see. You know, I obviously an Android version is going to have to, you know, that allows offline will have to happen. There's a Windows Phone version in the works that is in an app preview mode right now, which is, you know, lackluster in some ways, but we'll see how that evolves. But I wouldn't be surprised if the next few months saw some big advances on the mobile app. So this is the first one. It's certainly overdue, so glad to see it.
Yay. Well, let's see, Mary Jo. I think you're up now with your enterprise pick of the week.
Yes. My enterprise pick of the week is Microsoft's very first acquisition of 2014.
Already?
Already.
Wow.
They bought a company this week named Parature, P-A-R-A-T-U-R-E. Parature was a Microsoft partner, a reseller partner. They do external facing CRM, so things like help desk and external agent kinds of functionality. And Microsoft's going to take their technology and fold that back into their own Dynamics CRM products so that it'll be integrated with both Dynamics CRM online and Dynamics CRM on-prem. That integration is probably going to take a while. When Microsoft's bought other Dynamics-related acquisitions, it's usually taken them 6 months to a year to actually get it tightly integrated in with Dynamics. But this is very significant because Microsoft has had a lot of pieces of their CRM solutions that are internal facing, but they've been lacking the external facing solution that some of their competitors like Salesforce and Oracle have had. So this now gives them a much more complete kind of a CRM offering, and it should help them when they're going head-to-head against their competitors. We don't know how much they paid. They didn't say, but the rumored price was $100 million. And they are supposedly going to also take on 100 new employees who currently work in Herndon, Virginia, for Parachurch.
Hmm. Herndon. That's like, that's near AOL and...
NSA.
The NSA.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, customer service. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, with extreme prejudice.
That's my kind of customer service.
I served the customer.
I'm going to come down here and take care of this problem myself. Where did you say you lived?
Isn't that an Arnold Schwarzenegger line? You've been served.
Should be.
You. Next one. There'll be a new one. Your codename pick of the week.
Codename pick of the week is Normandy. And the reason I made this the pick this week is because we've been talking a lot about Android on Windows devices and on top of Windows. Well, Normandy is the codename for this phone that some of you may have heard of that Nokia has built that runs Android. This, a lot of people were thinking, oh, this was just a hypothetical thing. There actually is a phone that out there, a phone design where it's Android, the open source project version of Android tailored for a Nokia phone. And we've got the screenshots from Ev Leaks, who is a master leaker.
Seems to be pretty right on every time.
He's
right?
Usually very right on. Yeah. I think these look very believable, these images they show.
Could be Evelyn.
Yes, could be a he or a she.
Yeah.
But yeah, the very interesting how Microsoft's taking away some of the capacitive buttons, supposedly. Or I should say Nokia is, because Nokia is still not yet part of Microsoft officially. But yeah, when you see these designs, it's possibly part of the strategy towards having more generic hardware that could run either just Android, just Windows Phone, some combination, some dual boot thing. We don't know. But this makes it look like Microsoft... Well, I shouldn't say Nokia has been thinking through what would it look like if you had Android on a low-end phone, almost like an entry-level phone, even lower than things like the 520, a way for customers who are maybe on the Asha line of phones now to kind of have a conduit into the Lumia family.
Do you think the choice of code name is significant after all?
I don't know.
As Paul and I, as World War II aficionados, might right? note that was Normandy Beach was the... place D-Day right. began, the invasion, and maybe this
could
is
be.
Nokia's invasion into Android territory.
Yep.
I don't know.
It very, very much could be.
Yeah.
I've never heard a theory why it's Normandy, but that's the code name.
Well, you're going to watch carefully for other beach names like Omaha.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We will.
Interesting. And Mavericks, of course.
Right.
Mavericks, yeah.
That's right. The Germans invaded Santa
taken.
Cruz.
Yeah.
And finally, your beer of... Well, wait a minute. Do we want to do beer or... your beer of the week.
Yeah.
You got two
I'm doing a beer of the week
things.
And then an app, yeah. a beer app. So okay. The beer of the week is... I may not be pronouncing this correctly, but a Goose Tilquin. It's a Belgian lambic slash sour beer.
Goose term as well.
Yes.
I should Goose get our... Like, yeah. We have a Belgian in-house for just these purposes.
Do you? Very good.
I should get Frederic over here.
Goose.
How do you pronounce that, Frederic? Ud Goose Tilquin.
It's pronounced Rankle.
Rankle. So it's Old Goose. I don't know what it is. What is it?
Right. So what they do is they take lambic beers, which are sours, and they combined... various ones and create this unified beer out of these various
lambics. It's a blend?
It's a blend.
Interesting.
And it's very dry and it's nice. It's got a nice sour. A lot of people have said to me, what's a good entry-level sour? If you don't like sweet beers...
Come here,
like
Frederic. Frederic is going to now read this name for us. Frederic, how do you pronounce that?
Ou de gueuse.
Ou de gueuse.
Tilquin à l'ancienne.
Oh, so sexy. Oh, thank you.
Does she do the voiceover on the Paris Metro?
Thank you.
That's good.
I don't know what she said, like, but I just got a chill when she said it.
Yes, it's very good, though. If you've been wanting to try a sour and you've been a little afraid, I'd say this would be a really great beer if you can find it at Whole Foods or somewhere, because I've seen it around in bottles. It's a good entry-level one to give a shot. I also have a beer app of the week. This just came out for Windows Phone this week. It's called Beard.
Not B-E-A-R-D.
No. B-E-E-R-D.
Like, beer me. I've been beard.
Exactly. I've been beard. And if you're somebody like me who goes to stores and is always using your search button to look up beers, like, what do people think of this beer? What kind of beer is this? This gives you a giant database of beers already plugged in, and you can see the style and the alcohol content, whether it's organic. It's also linked in with Untappd. So you can see this have like a social feed in there so that you can, if you want to rank beers or rate beers or add in beers, do all that. I've been using it, and it's really good because it's saving me a lot of time when I'm trying to do beer research, which is very important for this show.
Oh, it is. Is it?
It is. So 99 cents. There's a trial version, and the full version is 99 cents. It's a very good app.
Well,
I like it.
I just want to thank you for doing that hard work and research.
I know somebody has to do it.
Why don't you have a beer blog?
I've thought about it.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Mary, I should think of an angle.
I can have my companion sushi blog.
I know, that'd be cool.
Are you? Yeah. I didn't know this, Paul. You're a sushi aficionado.
I am.
Oh. Hey, next New Year, will you come on and make sushi with us?
I will.
Do you have do you have a roller and do the whole thing?
Yeah. We don't do rolls, but we make sushi here. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Sure. You do the ice cream roll or?
No, we don't. We just
no
do
rolls at all.
Like Geary style, on rice.
Oh, yum, yum.
Yeah.
I think we found another segment for next year.
I know. That would be fun.
Oh. We'll have beer with Mary Jo, sushi with Paul. This is going to get good. Paul Thurrotz.
Flash freezing your fish.
You guys are great. You guys are great. So nice. Thanks to both of you for allowing us to move the time. Now, Wednesday's 11 a.m. for Windows Weekly. That's 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. If you want to watch live, and I do encourage you to watch live. It helps us. We are always looking at the chat room and listening to what you say and all of that stuff. So always come in live if you can. But if not, on-demand audio and video, always available after the fact at twit.tv/WW or wherever you subscribe to podcasts, including, of course, Windows Phone. Saw Rob Greenlee of Microsoft Monday and thanked him again for the unparalleled support for podcasting in Windows Phone. Compared to every other phone platform, it's the only one that has podcasts right there. Right?
It's true.
I'm not mistaken.
Well, built right in. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Built right in. So we love that. And I think we can credit Rob with that. Paul Thurrotz is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also the author of the Windows Music Book, windowsmusicbook.com. Windows phone book.
Xbox
Windows
Music.
I'm sorry, xboxmusic.com. Windows phone book. Windowsphonebook.com. And, well, you find it all at
it's
Supersite. Winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley writes about beer and Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft. No, she doesn't write about beer, but maybe someday. Allaboutmicrosoft.com. I hope you feel better, Mary Jo. Sincerely, thank you, because I know this is not the first thing on your list you'd like to be doing. You probably want to be curled up in bed right now.
Sorry if I coughed a lot on the
I didn't
show.
No, we didn't hear one cough. I coughed more than you did, yeah. So nice job. You hit it well, like a pro. Thank you, everybody. And we'll be back here next week on Windows Weekly.